if you guys sort of join that channel, the Java channel, we'll see. Maybe he will show up there. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay, thank you, David. Yeah, this is cool. This is great.
Yeah, I see a bunch of people on the call. I'm guessing they're joining for the next hour, but does anyone else have a quick question about Quilt? If not, we can end the call, but happy to answer anything.
Okay, thank you, David.
Yeah,
thank you.
And if you guys can meet in 2 weeks, let's keep the conversation going.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Morning, all. I'm assuming we're still waiting for Ram.
Good morning.
Morning, or afternoon, or whatever the time is.
Morning.
Yeah, Mike, I don't see Ram on Zoom yet.
Yeah, I don't see him on the list. I haven't heard from him today about whether or not he was attending or not attending. So I'm assuming he's coming. Let's just say that normally when he's not coming, he finds a creative way of volunteering either Stan or myself or Hart in order to run things for him. And none of us were creatively volunteered this week. So I'm assuming that he's on his way. What do you think, Stan?
Definitely.
Mom's here, so he must be here.
Morning, Ben. It's been a while.
Good morning.
Well, morning, afternoon, / whatever your local time is.
It's about afternoon, 3 minutes afternoon.
Good morning, folks. I'm here.
There we go.
Ha, we knew you were coming.
How's it going?
Very well. I have a hard stop at 9:30 today, so yeah, for the first half hour.
Thanks for joining.
we should give folks a couple of more minutes to kind of join. Looks like Bin, did I hear Bin's voice?
Or some representation of him. Yeah, finally be able to support things around to attend this, but
fantastic.
I can't believe Mick is dutifully filling in everybody's name.
I'm doing my best. It's, you know, what you pay me for. Oh, wait, you don't pay me. Okay. Maybe.
We've been actually fairly good about maintaining that. I mean, it's not 100%, but thanks to Mick, I guess.
Oh, I just... Just remembering back to the, you know, let's see who gets to vote and who doesn't get to vote, and how do we show that people are participating in those kind of issues?
All right, maybe let's get started. Just quick reminder of the Linux Foundation's antitrust policy and notices posted on the meeting notes on top. That out of the way. It looks like you'd made some updates to the identity paper. Maybe we can take a quick look at it. And then.
Yeah, I did. How many weeks ago? trying to get to the link. Yeah, I think the other part of this is Identity Mixer. We are wrapping up 1.3 release now, so I think the information is ready to curate and include in here. So I'm going to do that next. But probably in general, is this the kind of information that we are looking for in this document?
So I guess now we are looking to kind of actually fill in sections relevant to each project, you know, and hopefully aligning with the sections that we've already outlined, right?
Yeah, so I'm very much talking about the current identity, specifically system identity implementation in Fabric here, and this is the default implementation. The other one that I mentioned, Identity Mixer, is another implementation, but would require some configuration in order to enable that. It is also available out of the box. So the first one here is the implementation that based on X509. Certificate authority. And then I'll talk about, you know, how it is being abstracted out from Fabric with a component that we call Member Service Provider or MSP to provide that abstraction so that different implementations may plug in, example is the Identity Mixer, also plug in, making use of the MSP as the abstraction layer to communicate with other components without having to make changes throughout the code base. So this is a component that provides an abstraction layer in which we can very much name a few here. Is that the first thing first is that the root certificate from X509, that's the root CA. And then optionally, there's any number of intermediate CAs that can participate in the network. And again, optionally, the organizational unit specification as part of the certificate. And the required keys are public key and private key. The public key represents the identity of the entity on the network. And finally, the optional CIL, which is the expiration list that's available for the MSP to manage during verification or authentication of an identity. So that means that every node on the network has an MSP, and that MSP would do two things. One is the identity of that node on the network. Secondly, it indicates which organization that identity belongs to, meaning that which root certificate or root CA that identity belongs to. And the concept of root CA becomes important in this particular X509 implementation, because that normally would represent a member on the network. So, you know, say a network was made up of three members, then normally there would be three root CAs. Not necessarily, but normally there would be three root CAs, and each member would issue certificates for their participants, like, you know, additional users or additional nodes on the network. They can issue those certificates for their users. And that being authenticated at the time the node or the entity joins the network, the authentication happens by signature verification and verification of the trust chain. So if there's any intermediate CA, then it would walk up the chain always to the root CA to verify that identity is authorized in the environment by that particular root CA. So that's how things work for X509 certificates in Fabric today.
Great, great start. I was just wondering whether we could just put in two sentences for each of the kind of our sections. You can break it out that way if you know that's possible, right? So for instance, our first section is establishing a root of trust. And I guess what you described, maybe we can just, can we just have, you know, in Fabric, root of trust is established by using root CAs in each of the participating member organizations?
Yeah.
So it's an example of root of trust.
Yeah.
Is that the way?
That, yeah.
Do you need to mention the Fabric CA at all? Which can function...
Go ahead.
Which can function as you know, as the, which can be made to function as the root CA as well, instead of relying on a bridge into the legacy system using a root CA that's external to the blockchain ecosystem, or rather, you know, you have two ways of establishing that root, right? The other thing that seemed to be there in the documentation is the use of LDAP which of course is was kind of a smaller version of the X.509 situation. Is that understanding correct, Bin?
I'm not sure about the LDAP case. The LDAP is a plug into a convenience plugged into Fabric CA. And in my mind, I can see the Fabric CA as an optional component. If an organization doesn't have a CA already, then they would use Fabric CA as the server to allow them to administer identities. But it's an optional piece. It doesn't require to use Fabric CA. And in Fabric CA, the identities could be read from an LDAP server. So rather than having to come up with these identity or CA or name somehow separately, enterprise normally have an LDAP server somewhere, an enterprise directory somewhere already. So they would integrate with Fabric CA and make use of that as the source of identity, and Fabric CA would manage that connection. Since we talk about system identity here, those peripheral components, I'm not sure whether we should mention them here, describing them here, or they are not significant to, not important to mention in this paper.
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is that we describe the functional way in which the things work. But I think that it is important to mention, if not the Fabric CA, the way in which this chain of trust then also transitions into the identity of the participants, which are not just of the system nodes or so on. I mean, and in fact, the system nodes are only proxied by using public keys, right? I mean, when you say a system node, it means that the component, let's say the endorser or something, is running under a particular username. Is that correct? Or, I mean, in the end, it has to connect to some entity, right? Like a human.
From the system identity point of view, if we apply X.509 to it, then the only identity is the only external identity is the MSP. In other words, the public key of that MSP. So in Fabric system, every message, whether sending from a user or sending from an application or from a peer, it is signed by that secret key, whose public key is the identity of that entity in the network. So there isn't another form of representation if one to use X.509. Right. Certainly, someone else can implement another thing to plug in into the MSP and making use of different mechanism to surface the identity versus the using public key.
And this is done purely through folder-based systems, right? I mean, the basic implementation. This is just. That is the implementation, and like you said before, you know, we should probably stick to the functional piece in this paper. But these are, you know, natural questions that come up when people talk about this, because although we keep it in the sort of a slightly abstraction layer, we have to, when people actually ask us, you know, how is this done, then we have to get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty when someone questions us. That's all.
Yeah, I think that how is an interesting aspect of it, because I would struggle a bit too when trying to write up this point, is how much of a how that should be here, or should I refer, curiosity to the document, to the online document. That's another way to reflect the details from entering this document. It's up to us to make that decision. I can put more information here if needed. Right now, it's kind of very much focused on a high-level description of what being done in Fabric for system identity.
So, Ben, I think I'm in agreement. We don't need to kind of detail the full design here. We can just refer to, the appropriate design docs. But I think it'll be good to have maybe a couple of sentences for each of the kind of functional requirements that we've called out, right? So, just maybe restructuring it to saying, okay, so the first section is establishing a root of trust, right? So maybe we spend a few sentences describing how establishing a root of trust happens in Fabric. So it sounds like that's the section that you've described on top, right? In the sense that, so should we treat the MSP itself as a network entity that is a component that there is one, and so the MSP itself has a certificate that's signed by Roots CA?
Right, so the MSP is an abstraction in which, if we look into the detailed implementation of that, there's a number of items in it. Now, one of them is the Roots CA. So that Roots CA, the Roots CA is of course the public CA, the public key of the Roots certificate that is available as part of that MSP, together with the MSP's public key and private key. So I can bring some of that in to help clarification of what are the elements of the MSP in here on that first paragraph.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe we can start with putting, hey, here's how, so if I just tie it back to our initial sections, maybe a couple of sentences for each of those, right? So let's say establishing a root of trust. And from what you're saying, it sounds like it should be, in Fabric, during the genesis process, we include the identities of the MSP of each participant in the genesis block. And those themselves, the root of trust is an external root CA managed by each of those organizations. And I guess, that is the root of trust, right? The external CA would be the root of trust, correct? Is that the default?
Right.
And then maybe go on then to say, what's our next section? Enrollment services, right? So is the MSP providing the enrollment service for other network entities?
No. So, not from the MSP. It would have to go back to the CA in order to get additional identities.
MSP is for authentication. right? During transactions and so on. So the enrollment side is the creation of that chain from the CA side, right?
Right, right. So the CA is the one that's responsible for, you know, all the activities having to do with issuance of identities.
Got it. So if you don't have a CA, you can use the optional Fabric CA. But
correct.
Then, you know, there's no, so the Fabric, so it's the CA itself is an optional piece. You would, all enrollment still happens via an external CA.
Right.
Okay, but that means that does not get posted. Enrollment transactions then don't get posted on the ledger. Is that correct?
No, the act of the enrollment is not, but the act of verification is, right? Because that root CA must be a member of the network in order to authenticate or verify the members of that CA.
Okay, and even when using the Fabric CA, enrollment is not on the ledger, correct? Is that right?
When you Fabric CA, enrollment, correct. Enrollment happens on Fabric CA.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so maybe, you know, on the enrollment section, say, you know, the enrollment happens through the external CAs or optionally the Fabric CA. So that might be just on that. Should we just do that now, or do you want to just, you know, take?
Oh, I did take note, and I can write that for next time.
So that is enrollment services. Authentication and authorization should be fairly straightforward in the regular system, I guess, right? So then you're just using X509 certificate verification from any system entity. So the system entities would enroll with external CAs and get their certificates from external CAs, and then you would authentication just happens based on certificate authentication.
Right.
By the MSP.
But that's MSP is doing that, right?
That's
right. The MSP has code implementation to do that, like verify function, by function. Those functions are implemented as part of the abstraction.
And I guess authorization, does authorization involve, you mentioned LDAP previously, is that LDAP used for authorization, or is that just an external mechanism for?
No, LDAP is not part of authorization. So authorization is defined differently, and there are multiple levels that we call policies.
And you use RBAC, right?
Yeah, it's getting complicated because
goes into
at
the
one level.
Yeah.
So at the highest level, there's a concept of channel, right? So let's not even think about channel at this point. Let's think about there's only one channel. So let's not talk about that at this point. But say a network, right? A network would have a policy, and on that policy would specify who has access to this network. That's the number one, right? That's from the authorization point of view, who has access to a network. That means that the specification of a set of MSPs that represent those organizations that have access to the network. So that's level number one. And then after that, then we also have to say that for those who have access to this network, what can they do? Right? What can they do? Can they write? Can they read? And who are they? Are they orderer? Are they peer? Are they client? Are they application? So, you know, those have certain designation that is part of the MSP, from the organization, from the structural point of view, they have that kind of indication what the identity is about in the network. And because of that, then they would have certain functions in the network. So for example, if an entity is designated to be, if an identity is designated to be client, then that identity would not be able to perform functions such as endorsement, for example.
Right.
It would not be able to. So, you know, those kind of things are part of the policy specification, and it gets very, very complex.
So maybe you can add a couple of sentences, Bin, about who is which entity in Fabric is managing the policies and who is enforcing those policies. Is it done primarily to MSPs or is that distributed to other functions? Maybe a couple of sentences, that would be good.
Yes. Let me take a note of that. Yeah.
So where are those policies managed and where are they enforced? You know, point to functions and then you can just point to those docs if people want to know more details, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And then again, similarly, I think you already mentioned revocation and change management that's happening through transactions on the ledger that are processed by the MSP. System smart contracts, system chain code.
CRL, I think, is completely different. The same way as he was talking about the enrollment, it does, I don't think the CRL enters the ledger at all.
I think I heard Bin say that the revocations are had done through transactions on the ledger.
Yeah. So revocation list is part of the what we call configuration. On the MSP, and this is, you know, a dynamic list per MSP. When we authenticate an identity, there's a number of steps. There are three steps that are listed at the bottom there. But one of the steps would be to consult with the CIL of that particular MSP to see if it's included in that MSP or not.
But it has nothing to do with the ledger, right? I mean, in the sense that CRL is a it's basically a file which consists of a list of things that are, whose public keys, whose certificates have been revoked or changed.
So CRL, right. You're right. Initially, CRL is imported as a file. But it is part of the configuration transaction on the ledger. So it is stored on distributedly on the ledger so that the MSP of the organization would be able to verify or authenticate the identity. One of the steps there is to consult that CIL.
So are the contents or only the file name? Because obviously, if the CRL is actively managed, then that contents can change, right? I mean, somebody leaves, some nodes leave, you know, whatever it is, then those actual, the physical contents keep changing. So those are
right.
The contents in the configuration transaction. Does that need change every time? Meaning,
yeah.
There's a configuration transaction, then there's some kind of an update to the configuration transaction. But in this case, are the contents listed there or only the file name?
Yes, the content is listed as part of the configuration transaction. So, you know, if one revoked an identity from some CA somewhere, that action would need to result into a configuration transaction submitted for that particular organization on the network.
So every change to the CRL requires a configuration transaction. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. Yes. Otherwise it would be very difficult to manage this as part of the decentralized network, right? Otherwise, every authentication would have to consult with some kind of external entity.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe we can just capture that and reference the details in the external spec for the rest of the details.
Okay.
Bipin, any other questions there, or can we move on to privacy? I think we don't have too much in the privacy section. Is there anything you want, maybe a couple of sentences you wanted to add on privacy?
Are you talking to me or to Ben?
Sorry, no. But the first question was to you is, can we move on to privacy, or did you have more?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this of course begs the question of the CRL kept up to date. You know, this is a question that Keith raised when he came and gave a presentation on the identity working group. Keith Smith, I guess. Is that his name?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so from privacy point of view, beside the identities represented by, the public key, there isn't any effort from the X509 implementation to protect the privacy of the transactors or of the nodes on the network.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think in this iteration we just said, we assume that system entities are well known and public, and that's fine, I think. But maybe just one sentence saying, there's no privacy for system entities. And then we have a section on interoperable identifiers. I guess you can just say it's all based on X509. So in that sense, as long as you are using X509 and you have some way of, maybe I'll let you say what you want to say about Fabric and interoperable identifiers.
It is really different level that there's interop in the sense of be able to leverage existing certificate authorities and making use of available functions or utilities that provided by these entities at that level, but interop with, say, another network is a little bit, it would require a bit more work, because certainly the change of trust and the certificate are portable, but the concept of MSP is not, right? The concept of MSP is a fabric abstraction. So even though the contents of that is all portable, but the abstraction is not.
So if you have two different fabric networks, is there any level of interoperable identifiers between MSPs of two different fabric?
They would be, if they decided to use X509 implementation, then they should be portable. Given that the same root certificate available on other network.
I see. So you're saying if they share root certificates, root CAs, then that might be a shared root of trust that enables some level of system identity interoperability based on just X509.
Right.
Okay. So maybe that might be just a couple of sentences there about that.
Okay. Okay. That's a good point.
Sounds good. So Ben, thanks so much for being the first one to step up for spelling out the subsequent section. I think we can use that as a template for all the other projects. to say, hey, you know, here's our sections of what functional, what we described as potentially what needs to happen, and a few sentences around, you know, suggestions, but then we can see how each of the projects are tracking. So I think that would be a good structure to follow for everybody else. Mick, did you find somebody in sorry, Mick, you had to drop. I don't know if you're still here.
I do have a question for you guys, though, before for Identity Mixer. Identity Mixer has implemented at this point in Fabric 1.3, which is going to come out any day now. It's not really complete. One example is it doesn't yet implement the CIL concept, for example. So things like that, since it's not completed yet,
is it coming out? And if it's coming out in the next couple of weeks, then you know it's worth mentioning here, I think.
Yeah, it's coming out any day now. It's supposed to be at the end of this month. But what I'm saying is that it's not, the implementation there is not complete.
Yeah, without CRL, it becomes very difficult. Without CRL, it becomes very difficult to manage identities.
Right, meaning that it's not at a production level. Someone can use it and can play around with it. But in my mind, it's not complete because of lacking of key features like that. That it's not production ready.
And if not,
should we describe it or should we just have maybe one sentence say something of that nature or not at all?
I'm just going to comment. One quick comment, because I thought that IDMX could actually be a good a topic to bring up when talking about privacy, because you mentioned there isn't much done about privacy, but IDMX is kind of a big help there. So I think it may be a good area to talk about it. Maybe not necessarily as a kind of a production ready, but in terms of the concepts and how it solves the problem.
I think you could go through the entire, the same things like authentication, authorization, all that stuff, privacy, interoperable identifiers and so on. And then you can say that, you know, there are these things that are missing. So, and being worked on.
And especially if they're relevant to some of these sections that we talked about, we can point out that this is work in progress. It's not production grade, but hey, you know, new things are coming. And this is how they align with what the system entities sections, right? Like what I like what Stan was suggesting, saying, hey, you know, privacy, we're assuming it's all open. In the future, here's how you could use ID Mixer to provide some privacy for system entities if that's a requirement, right? So,
yeah. Okay, I'm good.
Then say that it's market clearly that this is still experimental work and not production grade. Right?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Who else do we have on the call? Do we have Nathan? I don't see him on.
How about the Iroha guys?
Who is in touch with the Iroha? My previous attempts at reaching out to them, they have gotten the initial responses where they said, yes, that sounds like a great idea. Let us get back to you about who can help. And then radio silence after that.
Actually, I'm in touch with Iroha, but I think it will be much more easier to invite someone from the team to the next meeting. I will care about And I will try to do it not in Russian, but in English and not in Japan. Yeah. Let's do it on next meeting. I will be responsible for.
Oh,
Alex, it may be also interesting if they could just write up something following that template, because I believe they are on a different time zone. So it might be very interesting if they could do it instead of just, you know, if they are finding it difficult to call in.
Actually, some of them are now in New York. Some of them I see in my office. So we can do it. We just not prepared yet. Sorry.
They are in New York. Where exactly are they?
Actually, there is some kind of conference. I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Makoto and Akada.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, if you will just send me in private message template, we will fill it.
Yeah, the template is what is in the top of the document. I mean, just Ben and Ram were talking about, you know, basically what, you know, how is the root of trust established, how is the chain of trust done, you know, all those things.
Yeah, okay.
I'll try to contact Makoto because I am also interested in his contribution to the identity working group paper, because he had promised it several times. I am in New York, so I have to, I'll try to reach out to him.
Yeah, just push me if you will not succeed. I know how to manage this. Unfortunately, they are busy with our project at the moment.
You guys are the responsible for the response. Awesome. Thanks, Alex. Do you know you or they are going to be coming to the face-to-face meeting following the member summit? I'm going to be there on 3rd, so I think we have a placeholder in the agenda. So do you know if they or you are coming, and we can have a session there, too, working session?
Not sure about.
Okay. So you're not planning to come to Montreal?
Unfortunately, I cannot come because I limited in my traveling. I will come only to Global Forum in Switzerland.
Got it. Okay. Sounds good. So thanks again, Ben, and let's follow up. I think we have a few more minutes. Stan, should we kind of jump to the interop topic and want to kind of take the lead there?
Sure, give that a shot. So last time there was a great discussion with Nathan and Mick, so unfortunately they're both out, but I think we made some decent progress and kind of outlining some of the concepts, especially for the cross-chain anchoring, like for the atomic swaps. So I still have it in my to-do list to talk more about the fungibility, also kind of elaborate on the topic based on what really great points that Nathan was making, then talk about DAP. Not as in player versus player, but payment versus payment. So I think the structure is pretty good at this point. So we kind of open, by the way, does everyone have the link to the paper? I can just repost it into Rocket Chat. Turn off. Okay, here we go. So we open up with the use cases and kind of a focus on five specific like higher level ones, and then just enumerate many more, which should probably just add brief descriptions to. So as far as the more detailed descriptions of those use cases, so starting with a balance transfer, I don't know, how much more do we want to fill out in those sections? Do we want to talk about more like the meaning, or how do we start to break them up into the elements and like the features that are required from the ledgers to support these? What do the folks think? Right now we have, I think for all of them, kind of just a couple sentences describing what this is about. Do you feel this is sufficient detail, or we'll want more? Any
silence?
Yes. Okay.
I think you know, a brief description would be good.
So I don't know if you have a chance to look what's there now, because there is a really brief description for most of them right now. Do we want to go more, or just move on to the?
I think it was an interesting discussion where Mick and you and everybody were talking about the primitives. And if you can link the primitives to these use cases, that would be very interesting, because now we have a linkage between the use cases and the primitives. Like, you can say, if you have primitive X and Y, we can implement this use case. Or if you have primitive Z, A and P, then we can implement this use case.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it would be great, but the issue I have paper-wise is that we're putting use cases up front without describing the elements. But ideally, I think ultimately that's exactly what we would want.
So are we going to talk about the primitives at all? Because that was where we left it last when we were talking about this paper. We Nathan in particular brought up the timing primitives, the before and the after, and the and before, you know, I really couldn't get a handle on before, and I was asking around, and I probably should contact Nathan again to see how before is implemented. But I know that you guys have not focused on implementation. But when we talk about primitives, we have to talk about primitives that can be actually practical and usable, not, you know, some idealized abstract primitives that can never be implemented.
Of course.
Sure. I mean, the functional requirements should be meetable, if that's what you're saying. They should be feasible to.
Yes.
Yep.
Go
ahead, Ron.
Totally agreed. But going back to Stan's question, right? Stan, at the end of the day, I think we need a little bit more detail. By the time we write up the paper, we need more detail on the use case, just so it becomes understandable and we can tie the functional requirements to the use cases and help flesh them out. But we can do that in a subsequent iteration. We don't need to flesh it out, you know, in the very beginning, right?
That sounds good.
But I do think we need a more detailed description, before it's ready to go out.
Okay. That sounds good. And probably it's now good time, and we kind of did that, as Bipin pointed out, to start talking about these primitives. So that when we circle back, we can actually reference the primitives that we've defined further in the document. So as far as these primitives go, think there's a slight mismatch in the granularity of descriptions. So I had this section from the previous iteration of the paper on transaction interoperability, which includes externalizing the states and then the pivoting the state and then pivoting node that Nathan suggested. So in under the externalized state, there is a kind of small bullet list that I made during the last call on about externalizable proofs. So I tend to think of these as a just a high level element, but do we want to break those down into like individual proofs and kind of look for specific proofs to be offered by the ledgers to implement the features, or is it a general kind of a thing?
So, Stan, I think you can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the way the Zmix is going is it will be like, you know, there will be a collection of common proofs, but and you'll have to compose those into kind of what you want to prove, with the caveat that, you know, you may have to write your own proof if your proof can't be composed from some sort of common set of proofs. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's worth, I don't know if we want to go into that much detail kind of here.
Well, I think it's actually an interesting point that we can say that these are the proofs that we see required for these use cases, but if you could use them composably, or a ledger can provide some kind of a special features, like a different variation of proofs, so, you know, like a zero knowledge specific to Redux, because I don't think we'd want to go into that level of detail. I think last time we talked, when Nick asked, what did I mean by state, like data proofs under the state, and I kind of hand wavy way, kind of talked about potentially zero knowledge or some other statements about the contents of the transaction. But I don't think, you're right, I don't think we need to go into much further detail than just the idea.
Yeah, and the other thing is the, like if you really want to optimize things, a direct proof for what you're proving is going to be much more efficient, right?
Right.
Composing things is potentially going to have a lot of overhead, so.
So as should we consider these as each one of them, of these, I guess, common proofs, as you call them, to be these elements, like high-level primitives to be used when we define the use cases? Or do we just kind of lump them together into this group of externalizable common proofs and refer to them as such when we talk about the use cases? I kind of feel that we should kind of probably promote them in a way to be first grade citizen and talk about each proof in specifically. But, what do you think?
Can you give an example of what you mean by that?
So, right. So I don't mean this in a more like academic or mathematical proof kind of way, right? I mean, what does it mean, say, using Nathan's, well, actually even easier, the proof of existence, right? Without going to details of how that would be implemented, although we can probably, if we can make it brief, bring up the examples, it's more of a, what does it mean to have a proof of existence, and just define that, And then when we talk about atomic transactions, and anchors, when we discuss the use cases, we just refer to the proof of existence as an.
I like that a lot. Yeah. So we should have a crisp description of what proof of existence means, and you know each of the kind of underlying primitives, right?
Right. Well, I don't think we should go further down from say a proof of existence. And we could, but I think that may get into more implementation details. And maybe in a implementation section, we can actually talk, well, each individual ledger can talk about how they implemented these individual proofs.
Yes, so, but we should describe proof of existence from a what perspective? What does the proof of existence actually provide, right? And the how, of course, we will, and it's always tricky about, you know, at what specification you, what level of detail you go on the what, but, you know, it's always a tricky balance, but you know, we need to describe what it means, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a good thing to do. If we kind of explain the what of some proofs at a high level. Yeah. Obviously.
And you know, like we did in the identity paper, we can use examples of implementations just to illustrate the what. But you know, we can go in and provide the details how the different projects implement those.
Making a note.
All right. Unfortunately, we're at the top of the hour and I need to jump on a different call. I think we should continue this in doing a face-to-face. I'm there on the 3rd and I think we have 3rd and 4th. So I'll try to book some more slots on the 3rd and, you know, feel free to come to the discussion on fourth as well. Who all are going to be there?
I'll be there third and fourth.
I'll be there all next week.
Awesome. I'll be there.
Fantastic.
Wow. So we have time that I decided not to go and you guys are all there.
Ben, it's a short hop over for you, right? You can sit down.
We will be on our vacation. So it's the end of the release, you know, it's time to take a break.
I see. Okay. Well, that's unfortunate. Well, we give you homework then. You get all that.
Yep. That's fine.
Homework on a vacation.
And then you do them all. Well, you know, enjoy the time up there. I'm very sure it's much cooler than down here now. So. Would be great.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to someone in Montreal. Bye.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.